Hey guys! As you know, we've been talking about transitioning into season 1.5 for a while now, and those episodes are scheduled to begin on April 20th. We're really excited to be experimenting with some new formats, and of course, to be bringing you guys a bunch of fresh content. The interview you're about to hear was originally supposed to be only about 10 minutes or so, and I had planned to include it in the Superfan, Stans, and Groupies episode, but when we were recording, we were having so much fun that we lost track of time and the interview ran way over. So I just decided to make it a bonus episode for you guys to enjoy. So without further ado, here's an interview with Mr. Ryan Abbott. You're listening to Air Candy, an uninhibited exploration of topics, ideas, and stories.
Cool.
Yeah, let's talk, and then I'm gonna get something to eat and a tequila shot because I'm nervous.
Do you want your tequila shot now?
Yeah.
I'll hold.
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
No. Let's do this.
All right. Hello, friends, and welcome back to Air Candy, where we like to talk about all sorts of topics ranging from serious to ridiculous while sharing our unprofessional opinions and advice. I'm your humble host, Colleen, and I've got a special treat for you today. But before we get into that, if you haven't already liked and subscribed to our show, please do so wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss out on any future episodes. If you want to connect with us online, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Air Candy Podcast. If you have a question, comment, or episode idea, you can drop us a line on one of the socials or send an email to aircandypodcast@gmail.com, and either Seth or I will get back to you as soon as possible. So hit us up. And with all that out of the way, let's get into it. So I'm here with a ridiculously talented musician and overall kick-ass dude. Please welcome my former bandmate and very, very good friend, Mr. Ryan Abbott.
That is high praise coming from someone who I respect greatly as well.
Oh, thank you. So welcome to the show. It's very good to see you. I'm so happy to have you here in my little virtual green room.
It's nice in here.
I haven't actually seen you in the flesh in about a year now.
Yeah.
So this is nice. I feel like this virtual meeting is actually the in the flesh for me now. So
yeah.
That's kind of how it is.
Yeah, that's how it is everywhere. I mean.
Exactly.
But, you know, maybe we can do... What did we do the last time we saw? Did we eye hug or something?
Yes, yes. Yeah. We said we were going to hug each other very hard with our eyes, and then we squinted really hard.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still seeing spots.
That's it. You're the one and only person that I eye hugged. That was so good.
Yeah, it was a nice eye hug for sure.
Yes. So Seth and I have been talking about fans, right? Specifically music fans, and even more specifically, the ones that tend to be on the more... overzealous side of the fence. Think super fans, stans, groupies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I want to know, what's your take on these terms and how do you personally differentiate between these terms?
Well, you know, it's an onion. There's layers, there's
That's
levels.
Very true.
Yeah. You know, there's
yeah.
there's rookie stans, there's very like harmless and yeah. I remember watching this documentary about a Queen cover band, and they had this fan who would sort of psychotically fold his t-shirts on his bed before each show of this Queen cover band or tribute band. And he would be locked up trying to figure out which shirt to wear to go and see his favorite band, which is a tribute to another band.
Interesting.
Yeah. And for me, it's like, most of the people that I've been personally in touch with in that universe, everybody's been really harmless. It's that level. But then, you know, there's every so often there's a ninja stan who might be a little bit dangerous, you know?
Yeah.
You kind of freak out and you sink a little bit when you see him walk in.
You're like, oh, here. Man. He's here.
Security!
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're few and far between, and those are people that have their own issues, you know.
I mean, the stands are like the ones that seem to be extra ready to fight, like stand up and fight for their whatever musician or whatever that they are standing for, because apparently stan is not only a noun, but it's also a verb.
I just stand myself. that's how I remind myself what a verb is. So in my experience, so I have myself, and I don't know if I'm reading ahead and destroying your plan to question me, but I have myself kind of stand out in a harmless fashion with various musicians that I really respect. And I think it's just, you know, you spend a lot of time in your room growing up listening to music, and you create this little universe for yourself, and and you assign roles to all these people that you're listening to.
Yes.
And when you meet those people in real life, they're completely different.
Exactly. Exactly. That's that parasocial relationship that we create. It's that relationship with that person and how we perceive them to be. But that's not, obviously, it's not necessarily how they actually are in person. So sometimes when you actually do meet this person that you've put on a pedestal and that you've created this whole thing around, like you think that you guys are going to be best friends, you think you know them, blah, blah, blah. But it kind of all comes crumbling down. What was that? That was a Jenny Lewis lyric, wasn't it? It's like something about, or no, who was it? Something about meeting the Beatles or the Rolling Stones. It was either Emily Haynes or Jenny Lewis. Oh, never meet your hero or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And isn't there a Morrissey lyric too, where like a fan wrote him a letter?
Yeah.
And he sings like, thank you for the offer, but this is my Morrissey voice.
Morrissey fashion. Yes.
Yeah. But you know, I grew up loving bands like Nirvana. And they're mm-hmm. on television, you know, and they're on MTV, and they are acting a certain way because they're on MTV, and they have these major, major records. And I really create these characters of them, who I think they are and how I kind of want to be like them and whatever. And then I started to meet like musicians in the scene that sounded just as good as Nirvana. Or any band that I'm listening to. But particularly, like, Nirvana was the band when I was at that age, like 11, mm-hmm. 12, when you're really starting to, like, come of age and your likes become very important to you and your personality.
Yes, you're finding your own identity.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I start walking in these circles with people who I really respect as well. And so that's a whole different trip, is experiencing the real life person compared to the figment of your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, and I can kind of see how somebody could spiral out of control. I know that makes me sound as though I'm a lunatic. I'm not, sometimes only on like alternate Tuesdays, but yeah. I see how somebody could develop like an anger or something because of that difference of what they expect and what somebody actually is. I never experienced anger, but you know.
Right. Well, you know what I think of, like, a very famous stan is that guy who made that video that went viral like a decade ago, the one who was so upset over how the media and whatnot was treating Britney Spears.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, leave Britney alone! And he's like,
leave
crying.
Leave Britney alone now!
That,
yeah.
he's like to this day, like, one of the most famous stans, because that's what they do. Like, these stan people, they get very, like, defensive for these people that they think they know because they've formed this parasocial relationship with them.
So, and I'm going to further excuse myself from being on that level of the stand-em, because my stand-em is all in music or some sort of art, like creative. It comes from a creative place. Like, so for instance, we were talking in the green room earlier. Did I say the green rune?
You did.
All right.
Well, with an M.
Back in the green maroon, we were talking about my just unabashed love for one James Laughter Jimmy Haha,
band
Jimmy's Chicken Shack, because he was just massive. I loved his records, and I get to meet the guy all of a sudden, you know, and but I'm not like totally geeking out in a way that is creepy. I'm more so like, hey, what kind of strings do you use? What were you thinking when you wrote that? Why did you, you know, and you can tell he doesn't, he likes that depending on how many shots of tequila he's had, like he'll entertain that.
Right.
But he's never not cool, as you know.
Yes, I do.
But when it gets creepy is when it's when the Stan has a non-creative fascination or an infatuation.
Agree.
Where I don't know, like that's something I can't relate with, but I've seen, and especially being in bands with the ladies, you included, you know, yeah, seriously, I used to joke all the time, like, would somebody come to my show tonight so I can have someone to talk to while Colleen and Sally talk to everybody that's there to see them. but I've seen that, you know, and that can be difficult.
Mm. So you would classify that as a stan, not like a fan or super fan.
Oh yeah.
Definitely not a groupie. Like that's a whole nother, like you said, all these layers of onions or whatever.
But... yeah. I think that the connotation of stan is, I mean, it's from the Eminem song.
Correct.
Right?
Yes. That's where it originated. Yep.
I think it implies danger. You know, it implies infatuation to the point of unhealthiness, danger on both sides.
You know. Yeah. Well, that's what he portrayed in that song that he wrote called Stan. That's where it came from. And that was the whole point of that song. It was a fan who started writing letters, and the letters started getting progressively darker and angry because the fan was not getting any reciprocal stuff from Eminem.
Yeah.
And at the end of that whole thing, I don't know if you remember, but the end of that video, Stan ended up killing his girlfriend and himself in this like fit of murderous rage, anger at Eminem.
Oh yeah.
So that was the original portrayal of what a stan was. But I mean, that was back in 2000. So you think of the past 21 years, the stan and stand-um and stanning has actually like evolved big time. It turned from like a murderous thing to, a year later, Nas actually wrote a song, and it was a diss track towards Jay-Z. And he started using the term stan in a derogatory way, like as a diss.
I see.
And then from there, years go by, and then it turns into this thing that's now being used by teens, tweens, and queens. And that's really where the stand-um lies currently.
So that,
it's really interesting.
Yeah, so then in that instance, or by that definition, I've only really have known one stan then. You know, everybody else has been either harmless or just mildly annoying.
And but was it a stan towards you or someone you knew that was standing for someone else?
Oh, no. It was a stan towards the singer of the Deadpens. Yeah. And
I think, you know, I remember hearing stories about this.
I mean, it's a little frightening, you know, and it was obviously through no fault of hers. All we were doing was going out and kicking ass, you know, like,
yeah.
But that was creepy. It was scary.
Well, it's true. Like there's a pretty girl who's talented and seeming very vulnerable, and it's very easy for especially a male to get really hemmed up in that allure. And like you said, just kind of creates this whole relationship in their mind.
Yeah. And you could tell like there was, you know, a proclivity to do this or to have this attraction be fueled by a musician, you know, because I think there were others. And yeah, man, it would suck the air out of the room. You know?
Jeez. Yeah. That doesn't make for a good show.
No, but after a couple shots of tequila, I didn't care. I'd just be like, ah, not my problem.
No, right.
No, I mean, but you know, like I've always been, and I learned this from one Randolph Shaw. I've always been like super protective of the bandmates, you know. Yes. Not to the point that I could ever hurt somebody, because, you know, news alert, like I hate confrontation. I would cower, run away, you know, but I would feel concern. And I think, like, were you there when Randolph,
yeah, I know exactly what story, and I think that we should retell it because this is a fantastic story. So I'll start.
Okay.
We're at what was then the poorhouse in Ocean City, and Ryan is playing with his band, the Phantom Limbs. Randy is the drummer, and there just happens to be some heckler or somebody, some drunk Tauron that's there. Well, it was a Tauron, correct? It wasn't somebody that we knew.
I had never seen him before.
Okay, so some tourist, Tauron, that's there, just kind of starting shit, and he keeps getting in everybody's face, because the stage at this particular bar, it's not a big stage. It's literally like a stage that was like a couple inches off the ground. So this guy is in all of the band members' faces, just kind of like talking shit and just being in everybody's personal space, and it just got really dark really quick. And Ryan and the guys are in the middle of playing this song. I cannot remember what song it is right now, but Randy, the drummer, is like getting angrier and angrier and angrier as it's going on, because this guy is getting out of freaking control. So Randy's like giving him like the death stare as they're like finishing the song. And Randy does not miss one beat as he's playing this song. And it just, you know, they get to that conclusion of the song as like the very last hit of the drums, and Randy hits that last hit of the drums, the freaking drumsticks go flying. Randy somehow, you know, magically leaps over the kit and is suddenly in this dude's face, grabs him by the throat, and like starts punching him in the face. And then it just got dragged outside, and no, you know, of course Randy doesn't get in trouble because this is our turf. You know, it was this guy that needed to get kicked out. It was just like, it was a magical scene. Like, it's ingrained in my brain forever.
Well, the song we were playing is called The Bizarre Bazaar.
There you go.
And that's it. And the way that
how
it,
perfect.
The way that it ends is on this, it's a very hard stop that.
Exactly.
You know, so it goes, dung, gong, 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 gong. And yes. I hear the, you know, and this guy's in my face.
Right.
And he's drunk, and I have this mechanism. I throw my hair down in front of my eyes. Yeah. And I don't, I close my eyes half the time anyway. I'm terrified to be up there, you know, to begin with. So I'm hearing this guy scream in my face, and I'm just out of sight, out of mind. Bizarre Bazaar has a shit ton of lyrics that are hard to remember. So I'm focused on that. But I am aware that this guy is being super annoying. And, you know, I kind of see him shuffle over to Casey and then lean into the stage and shout at something at Randolph. And I'm like, oh, this guy, you know, so annoying. We get to that dong, dong, gong, 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 gong. And it's in beat.
I know.
The last beat, the bump, 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 bump.
Right.
The drumsticks bounce off the snare.
Exactly. Exactly.
And fly up into the air as Randy pushes down on his stool and like leapfrogs. Yeah,
exactly.
The kit.
He leapfrogged right over the drum kit.
Yeah. And just caught the guy. Like this is some serious The Matrix stuff.
Yes.
You know?
This is just beautiful.
And he neutralized them. And so what I later learned was the guy was just hammered, drunk. He went out, he got kicked out of the bar. And he started spouting off some bad words, you know.
That you should not be saying.
And some guy walking down the street hears this guy shouting these bad words, and he just clocked him out for the second time, you know.
Jeez.
So this
guy. I didn't
know
about that part.
Oh, yeah,
I didn't know
yeah.
about the second part.
Yeah. You know, well, we were kind of – I was bummed out at the time. Because I was like, oh, man, I'm going to lose my drummer for a little while, you know. But – he was justified in that because that guy was a threat. He was a threat.
He was a threat
physically,
yeah.
You know. And I feel like I may have been oblivious to it, or...
Well, that was also before you had your eye surgery, so you had your glasses off and your hair veil in front of you, so, like, your hair is like your magic curtain to kind of, like, protect you against whoever's out in front
of
you.
It's a force field, it's a powerful shield. So... I do, like, my eyes have not been fixed at this point, and so it's just a blur of Randolph's dreads, like, flying up into the air.
Right.
It's like an anime scene in my blurry field of vision, and he's neutralizing this dude. And I'm just – and the silence, right? Because the band is not playing. It's like a record scratching, and you walk into it. You know?
Exactly.
And all I see Casey, like, reach around and try to stop Randy from just pummeling this dude. And someone's like, Styler, put on the house music. Put on the house music.
And then Shoop comes on. Shoop, doop, 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 doop.
Guy's getting kicked out and Lauren's dancing. Yeah.
Exactly. Perfect. I cannot tell you how badly I wished that whole thing had been captured on video, because it was just I'm not a violent person. I don't like seeing people get beat up, but for whatever reason, the way that whole thing played out and just the pure, like, athleticism of Randy leapfrogging over the drum kit, and
impressive.
Just the precision of that dun dun dun, dun and him grabbing homeboy by the freaking throat, like, oh
yeah. Well, it needed to happen. You know, that guy was threatening. You know, he was definitely a problem. And so, you know, go swimming back to the stream that we started from, when I see that threat now, I learned from playing with Randolph and being friends with him for so many years, you got to stick up for your friends when they need somebody to stick up for them, you know.
Yes.
And that's especially true of a band, where oftentimes you're in a strange city. You know, you're going to stay at a cheap motel because you're on tour or whatever. And there's always some yokel local who wants to control the night.
Right.
So you got to band together. You're a band by definition.
It's a family. It's a family.
Yeah. So when I saw this happen, when I saw this stand happen later on, which, you know, going back a few years now, it was kind of hard to watch, you know. It, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, I think that there was, I don't really know what happened, but it stopped. The activity stopped, the behavior. Maybe I just didn't notice it because pandemic and I haven't been playing, but, you know, I don't think that it's a problem anymore. I could be wrong. I don't know, but yeah, that stuff, when it gets scary, whoo.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need Randolph Shaw to animate.
Most definitely.
What is it? What's the kind of running that you do with your arms out?
I have no idea, but I know what you're talking about. I don't know if it actually has a name.
Naruto or something like that?
Oh, yeah, like Dragon Ball Z type thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's how Randolph moves, you know? It's like, shroom!
Everybody needs a Randy for protection. I mean, seriously, like, and I anytime... if Randy's around, I'm like, okay, I'm good. I'm good.
He does not. I mean, he just doesn't take shit. And I'm kind of the exact opposite. Like, any sort of confrontation, I wither. I wilt like a piece of spinach on a warm day. Randolph's like, dude, do we have a problem that we need to solve? Because I'll solve it.
If you got a problem, yo, I'll solve it.
Check out the hook while my DJ revolves it. Under pressure. Back to Queen.
Exactly. Okay, well, so that's a stand. Do you have any, like, what are your thoughts on groupies?
Yeah, so...
that's a whole nother section of the onion.
Well, and again, like, it's not something that I really... it sounds so dumb, but, you know, when I started listening to music, I wasn't listening to, like, Kiss or the bands that had, like, the showers backstage, you know? Like,
right.
I listened to music because I was, like, a super nerd about it. But since we're just, like, name-dropping the Phantom Limbs all over this place... there's a guy in the Phantom Limbs who's named Casey Briggs, and he I call him the fan dater.
Okay.
Yeah, because we would, you know, we play Ocean City is our home base.
Ocean City, Maryland, that is.
Yeah, I think Ocean City, New Jersey is dry, so that ain't for us. That ain't for us. So we started out in like 2007, playing a lot, like 3-4 nights a week for a few years. And, you know, every year, like a new crop of kids would flood in to town and they would stay for 3 or 4 months. They'd come to the shows, they'd party, and then they'd jet back to Reading, PA, mm-hmm. or, you know, Buffalo or some shit. So while they were here, they liked to party. And I just, every year there was a new generation of girls that would take a liking to our band and come 2 or 3 nights a week until Casey started dating them, you know. And then and then sometime around like the end of July, they would stop coming to the shows. Yeah, you know, there because there was all of a sudden that there were issues, you know, conflicts of interest, if you will.
I see.
So that's why he got the nickname Fan Dater. We would play these shows in August. Like, there should be a lot of people at this show, Casey. Why aren't they here? And he's just like, oh,
you know, whoops.
I may have caused some drama.
It's funny because like I was reading an article from the Rolling Stones that was published in 1969 called Groupies and Other Girls. And I think that was like the first time that whole idea of groupies was really, I don't know, brought to light. Because there's always fans like the Bobby Soxers and things like that from previous times. But this whole like rock and roll groupie identity thing was really coming into itself around the late 60s. And that article is really awesome. And the one thing I did not know was that there are different levels of groupies, and the lowest on the totem pole of groupies being what is called a star fucker.
Ah, okay. I've heard that term before.
And it sounds like the people Casey was with may have been them. I don't know.
That would imply that we were stars. I mean, we were a fun band, you know, and we put on a fun party. And like any party, people get all riled up, you know, and that's how it goes down. But yeah, I have not been on a level where there's like, you know, the Kiss scene, for lack of a better term. I have not seen that, nor do I really want to. Like, I don't know. I feel like at some point in the last 10 years, I unknowingly and unwittingly transitioned into a genre called dad rock, you know?
Dad rock. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are very few groupies in dad rock. Like,
I feel like you'd be surprised. I feel like there's going to be some kind of groupie in any and every situation, honestly, because there's always going to be someone who is intrigued by the band, who wants to connect with the band because they admire the talent, or perhaps they're just attracted to the musicians or whatever. I mean, there's always something or someone, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what about you? I mean, I know you and I share a lot of the same, you know, favorite bands or whatever, like a lot, like for instance, Jenny Lewis.
Yes.
I think I would totally geek out if I met Jenny Lewis.
Yeah. See, I thought long and hard about this because I don't think I've met a lot of famous people in my day and I have never geeked out. And I was thinking, I'm like, who would I potentially geek out to? And it just kept coming up. I was like, it's going to be Jenny. If I ever were to meet Jenny, I feel like she'd be the one person that I could potentially be starstruck.
Yeah.
And just kind of like, And I also think that she's one that I've built up that parasocial relationship mm-hmm. in my head, because I feel like, oh, Jenny and I would be best friends.
Yeah.
And we would just lay in bed together all day and write songs and,
that sounds just nice. Yeah.
Compare our red hair and, you know, that's just what we would do.
Yeah, that sounds really nice.
Who
knows? I mean, that could be a dream you realize.
That would be amazing.
Well, so I do have a quick story to tell. You know, we were talking about Jimmy Haha earlier. Like, I feel as though I geeked out when I met him and started hanging out in his little circle, you know.
Well, let me ask you this real quick. When did you first meet him? Because I was actually a firsthand witness to your geeking outness of Mr. Jimmy Haha.
Yeah.
Because you would be so like, Jimmy would be there and you'd get nervous too.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. I'd seize up for sure.
So was it around that time, like
no.
around the 2010, 11-ish time that you
no.
started to meet him in person?
No. I met him at one of his open mic nights. I had just moved to Annapolis and I went to a bar on like a Monday night, because that's what you do when you're in your early 20s, you know?
Of course.
And lo and behold, Jimmy Haha is hosting the open mic there. And I'm there with my roommate and he's like kind of prodding me to play. And I'm like, no, I can't go up and talk to him. What are you talking about? He wrote Hi. What do I do? I'm going to talk to him. Get out. You know, give me another beer. Give me a shot. No, I'm going to sit in the corner. I'm going to stew up this regret I'm going to feel for the rest of my life for not talking to him. So maybe 5 or 10 minutes later, he starts prodding me again. I'm like, fine. I'm going to go up there. So I go up there and I'm like, excuse me. Mr. Haha. is there room on your list for me to play a song? And he goes, you know, it just filled up. Just filled up. And I go, okay, and I dart back to my stool. You know, I'm sitting there drinking beers, talking about it. I tried. I went up to him. I drummed up the courage, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with that. So then a couple minutes later, this girl sits down next to me at the bar. And she's, you know, she's very fetching. And she knows the bartender who I'm talking to. The bartender introduces us. And we start talking about music. Because that's what I do. And that's what I talk about. And she's a music fan. Then we realize that we're both super fans of the band Ween. You know, it's my favorite band of all time. I'm like, oh, man. And then I casually say, like, you know, I don't really play music. I'm trying to be cool, you know. But if Jimmy had a spot available, I would go up there. I would play you a Ween song. But he doesn't have a spot. So all good.
Oh, well.
So she says, well, I'll go up and ask him because I know him. And I'm like, oh, shit. I just played my hand that I'm a Jimmy Haha nerd to someone that knows him. Great. So she goes up and she comes back with Jimmy. And now, like, I've urinated. You know, I'm out of my mind. And he's like, hey, man, I didn't realize you wanted to just play one song. Why don't you come up right now? I'm like, oh, you know.
On the spot.
Bowels release. Yeah.
So release.
Yeah. You know. So I go up there. And I actually do know this song really well. It's Voodoo Lady by Ween. And I start playing it. You know, it's cool. And I go back to the bar after I'm done. And, you know, Jimmy's like, oh, man, that sounded really good, dude. Thank you so much for playing. Come back next week. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, great, thanks. And lo and behold, I ended up marrying that girl. Mm-hmm. That was Melissa, who you could probably hear screaming at our children right now. now is the time when they start to melt down. But yeah, so that was the night I met Jimmy Haha. And depending on how you look at it, more importantly, that was the night I met my wife.
I'm so glad that you shared this story, because it's always been one of my favorite stories. And there's been, I feel like, a handful of times that we've been out with people and I'm like, Ryan, tell everybody how you met Melissa. Tell everybody the story. Tell everybody the story. Because it's such a great story. I didn't realize that that was the first night you met Jimmy. So that's something I didn't realize. The fact that you were playing it cool, like you didn't really know how to play guitar. And then you kind of just got up there and were like, wow, check me out. I mean, just kind of like wooing your future amazing, beautiful wife. I mean, it's just like a such a great story. I love it.
I tricked her good. I tricked her good.
got him.
But that it's, I adored Jimmy's Chicken Shack long before that, you know, like in my CD collection between the Breeders and Soundgarden and... you know, Pixies, Jimmy's Chicken Shack. And there he was. You know, it's crazy.
When you went out that night, little did you know that later on you'd be seeing Jimmy probably at least once a week and that you would marry that woman. Yeah. Like, all of this in one night.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
But, and you know, we know that this about each other. I'm very introverted and shy by nature, but because of what I do, because of what I like, I need to do, I like overcompensate. And so like doing things like that, like going up to Jimmy and talking to him for me was like a huge deal, you know, but I've done, like, I've gone on to do other things that are like, I look back and I'm like, how did I get the courage to do that? But I did. And because I put myself out there and overcame my fear of doing it, I married an awesome lady, you know, who I'm kind of like, I'm hiding in the closet from right now. Like this needs to go on just long enough until I hear the kids starting to fall asleep.
You've been a musician for more than half of your life. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you've seen a lot of things, and I just love that the musicianship in you is what has helped pull you out of your shell. You know what I mean? That and your magical hair shield.
Yeah, well, it's magic. it helps to have like those little charms that don't really do anything, but they give you like a little safety net, you know?
Yeah.
Force field.
Exactly.
When you're faced with, you know, your own self recognition and you're that I think is the thing that scares me the most, like, how are these people gonna see me, or how are these people going to, what are they gonna think of me, whatever. It's really just how I feel about myself, you know, what I think about myself. And once you kind of realize that the battle that you're fighting is with you, it's kind of like when Luke goes into the cave on the ice planet Hoth and sees that his true self is his own worst enemy.
Yes.
That knowledge, that awareness will kind of free you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like,
that's,
you and
very,
I,
very well said.
You and I played some pretty big shows that we were nervous for, you know? And I never not get nervous. You know, there's some people that you talk to and they're like, oh, I stopped having stage fright, like, way back when, County Fair, Iowa.
Right.
Not me.
Right.
I am always nervous. I'm nervous getting out of bed in the morning. Like, what do I got to do? I got to do this the best that I can. You know, I got to go to the post office and entertain that lady.
And the lady at the gym. There are some people that will say that if you lose that stage fright, and this is highly debatable, obviously, but there are some people that will say that if you lose that stage fright, then that means that your heart's not really in it anymore. So I kind of, that resonates with me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that resonates with you because, you know, you're very passionate with your music and all that. And you're a very creative dude and just very prolific. But I don't know. What do you think about that?
You know, it jogged up another memory. You and me on stage at the Metropolitan in Annapolis and me completely forgetting how to play a song
that
we've played a zillion times. A zillion times. I cannot emphasize enough how many times we have played this song and I just plumb forgot it. You remember that? Do you remember
I
that?
Do.
You not? I mean, I think at one point you looked back at me with your smile. That's your smile for everybody else, but your eyes are like, what the fuck's going on? Right. You know?
I'm like, what are you doing?
And I am just, again, bowels releasing for all the wrong reasons at this point. Like, oh my gosh, how am I forgetting this? And then I'm focusing on why am I forgetting? Like, how?
Right.
What is happening?
Right. You start to spin out.
And the next thing I know, the song is over. We somehow survived, and people applaud.
That's like, the thing. Like, we have to extend each other grace and whatnot, and then remember that most of the people there, they don't know. They could have thought that that's what it was supposed to be. So we're almost freaking out over nothing.
Well, I doubt in that instance they thought that that song was supposed to be like that. It was really weird. It was like when your Nintendo glitches out and you're like, the head of Mario is in the left corner of your screen.
Yeah,
like, it is so discombobulated. Right. Nobody knew what was going to happen next.
That was the one time that it was pretty unaligned.
it was not aligned at all. One might even call it askew.
Yeah, a bit askew. Yes.
Yeah.
But we still rebounded from that, and we had a fantastic evening, and we ended with cheers and applause and hugs and, you know, high fives. So I feel like you can't go wrong.
Yeah. And really, when I first started playing music 24 years ago.
See, that's amazing.
Yeah. 24 years ago, I played my first show in Ocean City at my high school, and I had a massive crush on this girl, you know, and she's right there. 'Cause I think she was in the drama department or something. She's right there in front of me on stage. And like, I'm having this total, again, bowels release moment. I'm performing.
Seem to have a lot of those, Ryan.
It's a condition. I mean, they make good products now that hide the line. But my little 15-year-old brain, I survived. I got through it. But I sucked. I sucked really bad in front of someone who I really wanted to impress. But I'd lived to tell about it.
To tell the tale.
And there were maybe some moments in there that were cool. And I hung on to those moments. And I just let that snowball until I did become a musician that I could be confident about, you know.
Yeah.
But I still to this day feel that a twinge. It's like, you know how when you first move into an apartment and it smells like paint?
Yes.
You know, and you never get that smell of paint back once you start putting your stuff in.
Right.
But then if you take all the stuff out and repaint the room, you get that hint of paint again. And it reminds you of those 21 days of living in someplace completely new.
Yes.
Every time I walk onto a stage, I get like that little, oh God, she's right there in the second row, you know, like, how am I going to do this? You know? And then I like instantly snap out of it, tune up the guitar and, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So.
And it always evolves into the rolling around on the floor, which is always the best part.
Yes. One tequila, two tequila, three tequila.
Three tequila. Floor.
Yeah, my dad likes to point that out.
But no, let's I want to make it clear that that's not, you know, Ryan is very professional. He's been in a lot of bands, a lot of projects. They're not all in the surf punk thing where he will end up on the floor every time. So he can be very distinguished as well.
I ended up on the floor at a couple of our shows, if I recall.
Yes.
Well, it's really such a dumb thing for people to like know about me, to like a calling card or whatever. I was playing a show at 49 West, and it's, you know, it's like this intimate coffee house, and some dude's like, hey, I saw you at Eastport Rockin' 4 years ago, man. You rolled around on the floor and drank your beer with your guitar, blah, blah. And I'm like, I hope you're not expecting that tonight. And he jokes like, oh, I kind of am. And so I did, like, I'm not bluffing. I'll play Freebird if you ask for it. It's just going to be the death metal version.
You'll play like a bar of it, and then you'll be like, okay, that's it.
No. I'll play the whole thing. You ask for an 8-minute song, you know, you're going to get an 8-minute song. I don't know why you did that. like, do you not know what kind of a song Freebird is? Like, I'm going to play it for you. I did, incidentally, I did play a show with a band who played Freebird from start to finish. Totally unironically, at like they meant it, you know.
Oh no.
And I was just like in the back, like getting my John Cusack high fidelity face on, like, oh, can't believe you guys are doing this, man.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Yeah, Freebird. Yeah, I'll play that shit, man. I'll play the I'll play like the polka version, the ska version, the reggae version.
Right. You will make it your own.
Yeah, you're not going to get the Skinnerd version.
You will make it your own.
Yeah.
Which I would enjoy. Just put a little twist on it.
Well, I do have to let you know that I am working on a record now.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I was going to ask you to tell all of our listeners about all of the awesome projects that you are currently involved in, and also where somebody might be able to find you online or how they can connect with you.
Well, you can find me online. You can find me in the parking lot. I'm in a band.
You in the closet right now, because that's where you are.
Well,
got the mic set up in the closet.
That's right. I am in the closet. metaphoric. I don't know. Yeah, so I'm doing a solo thing now, because that's what you do in quarantine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going into the studio, and I'm bringing in musicians that I've played with for years and years and years. And I'm doing a record, an old school vinyl LP long play, 72 minutes or whatever. Or no, I think it's like 47 minutes. I don't know. And then I'm doing a digital EP.
Nice.
And it's under the moniker Rabbits Anonymous. You can find me on Facebook. There's not a whole lot of them. And it's a very modest thing, right? Like, I just kind of started doing this. And it's really cool. And I had this dream, like, side B of the record is a rock opera a la Jesus Christ Superstar dedicated to the life and times of the Elephant Man.
Only you. I just love this. From the mind of Ryan Abbott. I love it. Continue.
So I had this dream, and the rock opera is about specifically the fact that he had to sleep because of his deformities. He had to sleep sitting up with his head leaning forward on his knees, because if he laid his head down, he would die. He would asphyxiate.
Right.
And die.
Okay.
So the last song is what I would picture death to be, which, you know, like, if you we're getting deep now. the point, like the seam between being alive and dying, like when you watch it from the outside, can seem like quiet, but I imagine the person who's experiencing it, I just imagine it being kind of loud and bright, you know.
I so agree with all of what you're saying right now. So, I so agree.
In my mind, I want to make that a musical thing. And what better way to do that than like a shit ton of guitars playing like this glorious angelic guitar solo. Like,
oh, that's amazing.
Know, Wild Stallions. But not cheesy 80s. I was like, you know, I want to get my favorite guitar players of all time. So I got Sean Loomis, Bill Todd from Lower Class Citizens, and Otto Grundman, who we know from Galaxy Collective. And I love all three of those guys. Otto is just a sweetheart, man. He's,
Yeah, definitely.
Bill is just a beast. And Sean Loomis is this guy who is just so melodic and cool. And, you know, I got them all in a room last week, and we played that seam between life and death. We played that, like, choir that greets you.
Wow. Oh my gosh, I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah.
Was it like a jam, or was it a something that you had orchestrated in advance?
It was something that I had orchestrated with
the
idea.
So you composed it all?
It's composed, but with like boxes for creative noodling.
Got it.
You know, and my direction was not very detailed to them. You know, like, we stood around in a circle and we listened to the track in headphones, and I said, okay, now you do the high bendies. And now you do the low bendies, and you do that cool little run that you do, you know.
Yeah.
I started doing that, and then they got what I was getting at and finding the themes, and they turned it into this symphony. Like, it's really, really cool. I'm very excited to share it. And I was going to, on the DL, send you a copy to listen to.
Yay.
Like, privately, you know, like just a rough mix or whatever, just so you can hear your buddy Otto just.
Nice. Yeah. I'm so excited. Yes.
But you can,
I will happily listen to that.
We're going to release it in the autumn.
Okay.
I'm looking at September 1st, probably. And there's going to be some digital stuff. and some videos accompanying that, probably to be released this summer.
Fantastic.
I don't know when I'm going to feel comfortable playing shows again, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
Because those the aforementioned stands are up there, like, with their arms around you. Play Wagon Wheel!
Uh-huh, with no mask.
Play Wonderwall!
Wagon Wheel! Only if you let us blend the Misfits in there, too.
Yeah, that was genius, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I also want to make a quick note about Otto and all them and how you were telling them, you go do the high bendies and the low bendies. I feel like you can only do that with really talented musicians. And I just want to let you know that that's how I always felt like I could communicate with you when we would be creating together, because I'm not a trained musician at all. Like, everything I've ever done, even just noodling around on the piano and playing all the other instruments that I've played around on, I don't particularly remember how to read sheet music. I don't particularly know how to tell somebody what to do. And when I would communicate with you and I'd be like, make it kind of like this, and I would just use whatever verbiage would come to mind, and you would just get it immediately, and we would just create these really cool songs. And you can't do that kind of thing with, you know, without having that raw talent. And I just, you know, just thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. No. But likewise too, right? Because I think that it was successful because we spoke the same language, as opposed to, I don't read sheet music either. I know, like, Face in a Space and All Cows Eat Grass.
Right, right, right.
But, like, I can't build an F sharp with a natural seventh or whatever. I don't even know if that's a thing. It's like a triple pump soy latte, you know?
Yeah.
I can't build that chord, but if you were to show me that chord, I could tell you, well, that's the third chord in the song Because by the Beatles off of Abbey Road.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So then in my mind, I know, like, what it takes to find that chord and what goes well with that chord. And the way that you and I would talk is, you know, I kind of hear this going in a Tracy Bonham direction, or a Liz Phair direction, or a Jenny Lewis direction. And we would
be, Zeppelin direction.
And we would instantly recognize what we were talking about because we had the same point of reference. You know, we spoke the same language.
Yeah. And I think because we both are audio learners
and nerds, you know.
True. Like, truly,
we know what we're kind of, we know what we're talking about.
Right.
we
agree.
We do. And I kind of did that with Sean, Bill, and Otto last weekend, where, you know, the song, like, it's not structured. And one of the things that was exciting to them was, oh, this isn't 12 bar blues. You know, this isn't just like four dudes showing off or whatever. This is more like a Rush song, like structured with time signature changes, key changes, different parts within parts, and then a recall at the end. And I'm talking to them and they're getting it. And then I'm like, I'm kind of doing this. You guys play around that. And the stuff they were coming up with was just, it was perfect. You know,
that's awesome. I cannot wait to hear that. And if and when the day comes when you feel safe enough to go out in person and play this, but I'm sure that by then you'll have a lot of fans of this, but when it's safe to be out in public, I'm certain that you're going to have stands and groupies, like safe stands, nice stands that are willing
harmless
to...
Harmless ones.
Yes,
I'll take the guy.
You.
I'll take the guy that picks out his shirt for the Queen tribute band.
There you go.
I have a couple dudes, though, that I wouldn't say they nerd out with me or nerd out over me, but they come to a lot of the shows. I have one guy in particular that was coming to a lot of shows, and he would stay after, and we would talk about comic books and music and have beers, and it's just glorious. And I feel like he was a fan. Like, he would start by saying, dude, you guys sounded awesome. I love that record you just put out, or that video, or whatever. Awesome. Now let's talk about Marvel versus DC or whatever.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I'm pretty lucky that I have, like, friends like that. Otherwise, If I were to ever get a stan, I would probably treat them like Tenacious D. Do you remember that Tenacious D short yeah. where Lee, he's like, you know, Lee starts going, Lee stops going to their shows and like, what happened to Lee?
Where's Lee?
And they rappel into Lee's apartment and they break through
the
window.
To make sure he's okay.
Yeah. And then Lee's sleeping there on the couch. He's like, we checked all the hospitals. You weren't in any of them.
Where have you been?
That's what I would do. I would totally freak out on my stand. I would turn the tables, you see.
There you go. Well, I definitely feel like I can classify myself not as a Phantom Limbs groupie, but as a super fan. Although I do wonder if you can consider someone a groupie if they're just like hanging around and helping load in, load out. Load out. But you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. But that's,
well, I did.
You guys are like one of the only bands that I've just been like, so amazing. And I know I've told you this, and I don't know if you believe me, but I listen to you guys in the car. You're like one of my go-tos. Like, you or the Beatles. You know what I mean? Like, it's just.
I appreciate that. Oh, I appreciate that. And it's always nice when I have friendships with people that acknowledge and support what I'm doing.
Super fan.
But I kind of return it to you. I'm a fan of yours as well. I also saved your leg from being amputated one time.
Oh, thank you. I still have the scar.
Yeah.
That you called strawberry on my knee.
Yeah.
it was in the shape of a strawberry.
Yeah.
And you were like, we're going to write a song called Strawberry on My Knee.
I just saved your leg by application of tequila.
Yep. For the listeners out there, the short and dirty story of this is that we'd all been out. I had one too many. I got a little excited and leapt off of about 3 stairs outside, which is not much, but it was enough for me to lose my footing and then bust up my knee. I didn't feel anything because, as I mentioned, I had had one too many. And I come inside and I'm like, I'm bleeding. I made some proclamation about my injury. And of course, I'm in this place. I'm at Casey's house, and there's no first aid kit. There's nothing. No. So what do? We do the next best thing, and Ryan goes and gets the Pepe Lopez.
Yeah, it's Pepe
tequila.
Lopez in the freezer.
Yeah. And it's like tequila on my knee and saved the day.
Yeah, I mean, you could have gotten.
Thank you for saving my leg. Yeah, all the Ocean City germs, absolutely.
Well, that's what the Phantom Limbs do, you know.
See, there you go.
We make you looking tingle, and by that we mean we put alcoholic products on open wounds.
Oh gosh, thank you so much.
Oh,
and
thank you.
With that, I also just want to thank you very much for spending time talking with me today, and it's been great just talking and catching up with you. And
yeah, for sure.
I'm just really happy that we got a chance to do this. So
yeah, we should do it more often.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you. And we will catch you on the flip side.
I'll be there. You can find me in the parking lot.
And everybody out there, go check out the Phantom Limbs. You can find them on Spotify. You can find them on Facebook. And also check out Ryan's solo project, Rabbits Anonymous. It's really awesome. I'm personally very much looking forward to this new track coming out. So,
and I think you and I have a track in the future that we got to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I would like to record some of the old stuff that we didn't get to finish, and I would like to do some new stuff too.
All that's great and fine, but it's all about Ocean City for me. We got to
Ocean City.
That's got to be on the alternate commercial.
Yes.
The guerrilla advertising campaign for.
I'm down. We should have won.
I know.
Ryan and I entered a contest many years ago to be a theme song for the Ocean City, Maryland tourism thing. And we wrote a really kick-ass song that we ended up going on for several years playing it live, and everybody loved it, but. You know what? We didn't win the contest, and we very well should have, we didn't.
Can you French fries, funnel cake, ice cream,
Ferris wheel, haunted house, you're gonna scream. Doesn't matter what you do, it's all great in Ocean City. Maryland, that is.
Swimming pools. Meth heads.
Oh, cork good bar. Grief. Purple moose.
Dutch bar.
The bloody bucket.
Oh, that's the Inlet Lodge bar.
There you go.
Frog bar.
Well, thank you very much again. So, round of applause for Ryan Abbott. Woo!
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I love the Air Candy podcast. You guys do a great job, and I will keep listening.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And I love you, friend.
Love you too, man. I'll see you soon, okay?
Yes. So thank you guys so much for listening and spending time with us today. Be on the lookout for the new season to begin on April 20th. And please don't forget to subscribe to our show so you don't miss out on any future episodes. If you have a question, comment, or episode idea, or if you just want to drop us a line to say hello, you can reach us on Facebook and Instagram at Air Candy Podcast, or send an email to aircandypodcast@gmail.com. So hit us up, because we want to connect with you. And until next time, peace.
You could tell she's like buff, you know.
I lift weights.
yeah. And I see her every day because I'm trying to.
Hashtag gains.
They're not leaving, you know. And then
stage five clinger. That's like every dude's worst nightmare.
Yeah. I'm sure you're familiar with the eSport Neighborhood Forum.
Yeah.
And all the lunatics that are on
there. Did you hear
that
noise? Ugh, I can't believe it.
Why is that helicopter flying? <I know. laughs> But we tried to start a podcast, like essentially just to make fun of those people. And it just immediately we took an off ramp and started talking about midget porn, you know? And then there's that for like an hour and a half, you know? And we get to the end and we're like, okay, signing off. Yeah, you can Google it.
I will Google it.
Yeah, Google it. Just a little bit.
Yes.
This is the co. I'm all done. No, I will not make out with you. Chlorophyll.
Chlorophyll.
More like borophyll.
Borophyll.
Spreads his cheeks and waits to be bidet'd.
Oh my gosh.
It's not easy to do.
I have no ass, so I can't do it. So it is very hard to do.
Good grief. Yeah, neither do I. I mean, is that the purpose of it though? Is that the idea? Like you need to immobilize the flapping cheek so that it jiggles without.
I think the point of it is to have it like bounce up and down, like,
yeah.
And if you don't have an ass, then you're literally just kind of
like vibrating.
Shaking your being like, ridiculous.
Yeah, like you're on that machine at Walmart. It's just a scene, man. It's a scene.
I mean, who wants to hear about marketing, you know, or NFTs all day long?
Mike Bray.
That's true. Touche, friend. It's like this, like you're doing like a twerk tutorial.
I'm sure
I don't even know how it came up, but I guarantee it was you again that steered that towards how to twerk or some kind of twerking show.
Yeah. God, man. Why is my mind so filthy dirty? I'm not a bad person.
Now midgets twerking.
It makes sense to me.
Good job, Wiener.
You were right. Yeah. Good job, Wiener. Good job, Wiener.